Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake. Carolina Snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason.
And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We are your hosts.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And this week we are going over our pal G. Gordon Liddy. This is the part two of the Republican shitbag series on G. Gordon Liddy. And as a little refresher, I think, so he was a little kid. His nanny was a Nazi.
Teresa.
She made him into a Nazi. He loved guns. He compared everything to the SS. He was electrocuting himself and eating rats. He killed a bunch of chickens. He joined the military and never got to kill anybody. And he was, you know, going and
he was pretty bummed about that.
Yeah, and he was going and training with a wound, an open wound on his side to try to get in. And he sort of just failed upwards into the military. If you need a refresher, go back and listen to part one. It's crazy. But we're at the point now where Gordon is leaving the military. He's now done with his military career because he realizes he's not going to be able to kill anybody, which he's super bummed about.
Bummer.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, man, this sucks. So he leaves the military, and he does what any good person does and has his IQ tested a whole bunch of times because, you know, he wanted to live up to his genetic potential, if you remember. He was very certain that he should be smart.
Right.
So he got his IQ tested a bunch, and he claims that it was anywhere from 137 to 142.
Just depending.
Yeah, depending on the day, which he called near genius level. I don't think that that's exactly accurate, but that's what he said.
Mm.
He takes this other weird aptitude test that takes him like 3 days, and it's like, it's kind of like a guidance school. The way he describes it, it's like a guidance counselor in school, like, it's a test to tell you that you're smart and also what you should be for a job.
Well, isn't there some test like that in high school that
yeah.
they take?
Yeah, it's basically that, but yeah. It takes them 3 days for some reason. It's not exactly clear, but the test tells him he should be a lawyer. So he goes and enrolls in law school.
Hmm.
His dad was a lawyer, so I guess
yeah,
he had some inklings towards that. So he goes to law school in New York. He finishes, and he gets accepted to the FBI. So we now have him in the FBI, which, if you remember, his uncle Ray had been in the FBI, and he
with the gun.
With the gun that he found as a 5-year-old.
Mm.
Yeah, and so he's really stoked about being in the FBI, but he gets stationed in Indiana.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's like the... that's like the store brand.
Yeah, it's not
FBI.
Yeah, it's not good. When I think FBI, I think of Virginia.
Yeah, DC area.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird, but he gets stationed there, and he claims it's like the Wild West there, and that like he's constantly getting in gunfights
in Indiana.
Yeah, yeah. He claims that he's constantly getting in gunfights, and that like the cops were teaching him how to do quick draws, and he'd be having quick draw contests with the cops. It's pretty weird. And he spends a ton of time describing the guns that he has. Dude loves guns.
You don't say. I mean, he's checking all the boxes for the list of serial killer, mm-hmm. like, what were the signs?
He very lovingly describes guns, too. He talks about them in terms like the way a poet might describe a woman.
Yeah, because we've seen how
guns.
He describes women.
Yeah, they're just property.
Right.
Remember, he was mad that his wife couldn't have more than 6 kids before her body gave out. And he was like, I don't understand this
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, we heard how he describes an actual woman.
Yeah, but how he describes guns is much more loving.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah, yeah. He also gives us that he calls the FBI America's SS. So,
wow.
Yeah, dude loves to talk about the SS. I don't know how...
It's just weird though, because he would call it that, but then he was saying it from a place of adoration.
Yeah, no, it means it's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, he's saying that it's fucking America's SS. The FBI is the shit.
Wow.
It's a weird. I would love to go back and it would take a long time, but I would love to go back through and just count how many times in his autobiography he mentions the SS, because it is a lot. I mean, like, so many times. I mean, I've left a bunch of times out, is what I'm saying.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, According to him, Gordon was transferred to FBI headquarters in D.C. He claims that in D.C. he became great friends with J. Edgar Hoover, who, if you know, founded the FBI.
So he got transferred to the name brand.
Yeah, he did. And if you know a little bit about the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover's the one who started it.
Yeah.
And he claims that he became good friends with J. Edgar Hoover and met him, but that's very unlikely. Most of it is a lie from what I can tell. It's more likely that he was erratic and bad at his job, so he gets sent to head office to be a paper pusher. Like, he makes it seem like he did so good they sent him to D.C., but I don't think
like
that's...
he got promoted.
Right. This is him, again, being bad at something and then getting promoted for it.
Right.
Yeah, that keeps happening to this guy. It's gonna continue. So at some point, he does get pushed out of the FBI. And it might be for things like this, quote, "My son Jim was born in April of 1961, and I was so elated at finally having a baby boy that when I thought about it the next day while driving through an unpopulated area, I stopped the car and fired 3 rounds into the air in a private ceremony of celebration."
Weirdo.
He's a fed driving around just shooting his gun
he's
in the
like,
air to celebrate
yee-haw.
Shit. Woo! Yeah, I think it's things like that that got him fired.
You mean promoted.
Yeah.
And then pushed out.
Yeah, he did. He got pushed out of the FBI. And so he leaves the FBI and he becomes a lawyer at his father's law firm. Mm. But him and his dad get in fights so much at work that he quits and goes to open his own practice.
What'd they fight over?
Well, I mean, probably over him being a fucking Nazi-loving psycho and his dad being reasonable.
His dad wasn't down with that.
Yeah.
Because he had to fire Teresa.
Yeah, so I imagine that they fought over that. Mm. I mean, he doesn't really go much into it, just that he needed to go out and do his own practice.
They weren't getting along.
Mm-hmm. So now we get further into the 1960s, and there was something that happened in the 1960s, kind of a big deal. It was Vietnam.
Yeah.
Now, Gordon was very upset at the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement. He was not happy with those.
He didn't like either of those.
No, fascists don't tend to like those
types
of things.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So his quote is, quote, "Valid demands by blacks for civil rights were often resisted violently by whites. And in response, many blacks were using violence as an offensive and not a defensive tactic."
Oh.
So he's mad. Mm-hmm. He's mad because they're like all these anti-war hippies. And black people are getting violent, according to him.
How dare.
Yeah. So, you know, he's not digging the whole hippie movement at all.
Right.
He is an anti-hippie. So, in 1966, Gordon went to go to New York to work for the DA in Poughkeepsie. Which is, by the way, if you ever have to write a script where you have to write the word Poughkeepsie a bunch of times, it gets really fucking annoying. That is a fucking annoying city to spell. And if you're out there and you live in Poughkeepsie, your city sucks. It's a shitty name.
Poughkeepsie.
Do you know how to spell Poughkeepsie?
I have no idea.
It's Poughkeepsie.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a fucking nightmare.
That's not what I'm glad I didn't try.
Yeah, no, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So that is how you spell it, though. And yeah, I had to write it a bunch of times in the script and I was like, God, I hate this word. So, anyway, that was an aside. But during this time, he spent tons of time with police, going on raids, brandishing his gun, not ever shooting anybody. But
while he was a district attorney?
Yeah, because the DA has a close working relationship with police. So he was like, let me ride with you guys.
They do, but not generally like that.
Exactly.
Close.
Well, there you go. Gordon's crazy. He's doing things that he's a DA lawyer, and he's riding around with the cops, brandishing his gun, going with them on raids. It's what he does.
Okay.
There's an interesting description. Oh, this right here is great. There's an interesting description of Gordon as a prosecutor during this time from an article in the New York Times. So this is from the New York Times, and it was like 1966. It's kind of a long one, but this is some good shit. Liddy's courtroom activities as prosecutor were occasionally a bit unsettling. On one occasion, he waved a knife under the nose of startled jurors, later overturned on the basis of that stunt, an opposing lawyer recalled. And another time, he smashed a piece of wood over the jury rail while prosecuting an assault case involving the use of a plank. Liddy paid for the repairs to the jury rail. However, the incident that most quickly comes to the mind of people who knew Liddy was the day he fired a revolver in the courtroom. The presiding judge, Raymond C. Beretta, recalled, "It went off. Pow. I nearly fell out of my chair." That's in the New York Times. So it was a blank, by the way, that he had loaded into the gun. Oh, okay. And it did actually have some reference to the case, because the defendant was claiming that the gun that was being said that he was using wouldn't fire. And so Liddy was trying to prove a point, loaded a blank into it, and shot it off in the courtroom and scared the ever bejesus out of everyone.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So now he's psycho lawyer. This psycho Nazi guy is now a lawyer.
He's just like smashing stuff around the courtroom, waving knives, shooting guns.
Yeah. It's nuts. I mean, this is what happens when you eat rats and electrocute yourself.
Could you imagine being
a
on a jury and that?
No. God. That's insane.
You're like, this guy's unhinged.
Yeah. I would be terrified. Yeah. He waved a knife under the noses of the jury. Like, what the fuck are you doing? The 60s was a weird, weird time.
Yeah.
This is where it kind of gets weird. So Gordon met Timothy Leary in Poughkeepsie in the late 1960s.
Oh.
Now, if you know about Timothy Leary, who he was like the acid king of the world. He basically made LSD into a thing. And so you would think they wouldn't get along. And they kind of didn't, in the sense that the way he met him was by arresting him.
I was going to say that must have been a legal case. Mm-hmm. Something.
In 1966, there was a raid on Leary's LSD lab in New York inside of a mansion. So Leary had gotten a friend who had a mansion to let him and a bunch of his acid weirdos live there and just trip balls and...
Was this in Poughkeepsie?
Do stuff. Yeah, in Poughkeepsie. Huh. So Leary had a bunch of hippies living with him there in the mansion, and Gordon organized a raid on the mansion, and he was even present during the raid. So,
of course he was, because he liked to ride with the cops.
Exactly. Even though he's the DA, he's riding with the cops to do this raid. This is a funny part of the story. Leary came downstairs with a shirt on and no pants or underwear and his dick just out. So Leary's shirt cocking it just with his dick out. And apparently the police and Leary and Liddy asked Leary to put his pants on. And he was like,
sir.
Yeah.
Could you please put on some pants?
And Leary's response was, absolutely not. This is my house. I am not putting pants on.
You know what? I feel that too.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
I understand that.
If I ever have called to get raided by the police, I'm totally going to just have my
house,
dick out. Yeah.
I don't have to put on
pants
for anyone.
Yeah, no, sir, I do not have to put on pants.
I'll wear a shirt.
Yeah.
But pants?
No.
It's too far.
Yeah, so he didn't do it. And it's interesting. They kind of became friends in a weird sort of way. And Timothy Leary is going to come up again later.
Oh.
So okay. Just remember that Gordon has a weird connection with Timothy Leary, of all people. It's bizarre. So Liddy does decide that he's going to run for Congress because he thinks he can make a bigger difference than in the DA's office. And according to the New York Times, it was more likely that Liddy was pushed out of the DA and that he used running for Congress as like an excuse why he would leave. And there were several complaints about him. So,
well, can you imagine working with him
yeah.
in the district attorney's yeah. office?
No, he's an absolute psycho. I cannot imagine that. That would be one of the craziest people in the world to be working with. So Liddy ran as a Republican against a more centrist Republican. And Liddy ran on crime, Vietnam, and social issues. His critique of Vietnam was mostly that the U.S. didn't war crime enough. That was the main thing. He was like, we could have won this shit a long time ago if we would have just nuked them. You know, that was his sort of deal. Like, if you just let us go and really fucking...
No rules.
Yeah. He also had this thing. So there was this whole part where he explained that if they would have just used the SS people, then the war would have been over. That he even has these weird claims that there was this secret SS group that was in the military that had come from Germany, and that like that they were holding them back, and if they would have just let those dudes go do their thing, Vietnam would have been over. But it's all a bunch of bullshit. Like,
wow.
He just really loves the SS.
So he's like, if we would have just let those Nazis in,
it would have been over.
To Vietnam, it would have been a lot quicker.
Yeah, which, if you know anything about the German military, makes no sense, because the Vietnam is a jungle.
Yeah.
And I don't think the SS would have did that well in like jungle operations.
No, they're kind of pasty.
Yeah, I mean, they fought in like Russia
they
and
wore
France.
Wool.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
If you've ever
worn
wool in a jungle, it's just.
I've never been in a jungle, but
really
I bet that would suck.
It's really not ideal.
Yeah, from experience, I guess it sounds like you're telling me.
Just saying.
Yeah. So next, he began working on the Nixon campaign.
Of course he did.
Yeah, so he was a big fan of Nixon.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
It all is coming together.
It's all coming together. Now we have a Nazi lawyer freakazoid who, you know, is working for Richard Nixon. So Richard Nixon was impressed by Liddy's loyalty. And when Nixon won the presidency, he gave Liddy a job as special assistant on organized crime to the Secretary of Treasury, which I didn't even know was a thing, but apparently.
Now wait, what was the title again?
A special assistant on organized crime to the Secretary of Treasury.
Oh.
So it kind of makes sense
because
because
you're like mafia.
Yeah, yeah. He might be like doing
mob,
RICO cases.
Mob money, RICO. Yeah.
Yeah, against the mob. I guess, but I'd never heard of that position until I read it.
Oh,
here,
well, he made it up.
Maybe he
did. But still, it kind of makes sense.
Gordon oversteps his bounds in this job constantly and just like declares administration positions without permission on the TV and to the press. And that means Liddy gets transferred in 1971 for all of his fuck ups. He claims that he was fired for making too many good decisions and winning arguments with his boss. Sounds like somebody we know.
That does.
I made so many great decisions that I got fired. It was the best thing ever. They were like, you're too good for me. That's who it reminds me of. In his autobiography, Gordon skips over the whole getting fired thing and instead tells a story about his son being bullied in school. This shit is bananas. Liddy advises his sons to escalate to violence as soon as possible with the bullies. The school does not approve of this, and Gordon argues that during World War II, the French schools taught kids to be nonviolent, and the German schools taught kids to be violent, and Germany took most of France in a very short period of time in the war, so he'll teach his kids to be more like the Germans.
And they said, touche, sir. Touche.
Is that not the fucking... What? Are you shitting
me? I'm not raising a couple of French kids.
Yeah, a couple of French pussies. I want German badasses. It's God. Wild. Yeah. This guy, he's a fucking trip. So Gordon, his kids keep getting bullied and it doesn't really stop. His kids get more and more harassed and some local teens show up and are like egging his house and vandalizing it. And Gordon decides that he needs to handle these teenagers himself.
Uh-oh.
He stays up late to catch the teens and ends up catching one and putting him in a headlock. This kid ends up like, going, like, it doesn't stop the egging, and the kid goes home and tells his dad, and his dad is like, what the fuck? You know, some dude.
An adult man.
Put you in a headlock?
Yeah.
So, Gordon agrees to meet with the father, but he makes sure.
At 3 o'clock after school.
Yeah.
Be there.
He makes sure to tell him to meet him at his house, and he makes sure to have all of his guns out on the table when the dude's dad comes over.
Oh, no.
So Liddy goes into great detail describing every fucking gun that was on the table and how pretty they were. And he implies that that scares the kid's dad, but there's no reason to think that. They just eventually stop egging his house. Not right away, but eventually.
I mean, for all we know, the kid's dad never even went inside.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But
they
he just really wants you to know.
Had a conversation on the stoop.
Yeah, he just really wants you to know he had all his guns
all
out.
All these guns, and he wasn't going to be intimidated by anyone.
It's also really funny when he's describing the guns. There's two kinds of guns that Gordon likes. He likes cowboy revolvers, and he likes German Nazi guns. Like, every gun he has, if you know anything about guns, when he goes into his description, it's like German Mauser pistols and German guns and big-ass cowboy revolvers.
Well, they're both associated with, you know,
macho-ness.
Domineering
yeah.
white men.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I never thought you could tell a lot about a person from their selection of guns, but with him, you can. Mm. You can totally tell about his personality.
You got, like, the Wild West, the unruly, the... Mm-hmm. You know, making our laws as we go, and mm-hmm. then kind of the more fashy,
yeah,
you know, structured, organized dictatorship.
Yeah, it's weird, but he squares that circle and like likes them both.
Strangely, it works.
Yeah, it does.
For him.
It's like toxic male douchebag.
Oh, yeah, it's
like,
gross.
Yeah, it's totally gross. And so, since he just, you know, skipped all that, we can learn from, you know, the New York Times and other sources what actually happened during this time period. And so even though the Treasury Department pushed him out, Liddy did manage to keep himself around the Nixon White House.
He was just loitering.
Yeah, he was just sort of keeping himself around.
He just kept showing up.
Mm-hmm. And so he was around, and the Pentagon Papers got released in 1969. And revealing the U.S. involvement in Vietnam was kind of based on a lot of bullshit. Mm. I don't know how much you know about the Pentagon Papers.
Not much, but I do know that it was bullshit.
Yeah, well, they were papers that got leaked in the press that basically were behind-the-scenes things in our build-up to the war, and that we knew that the fighting in Vietnam wasn't necessarily to liberate the South Vietnamese. It was because we didn't want communism to spread.
Yeah,
that's where the domino theory, if you've heard about the domino theory before, that's where that comes in. So the theory was that communism would spread from China into North Vietnam to South Vietnam and then into Laos and other countries in that area. And that as they would fall, it'd be like dominoes, and then communism would spread all the way across Asia.
Hmm.
And that was what we were really fighting Vietnam about. But we pretended like we were trying to help the South Vietnamese not get prosecuted by those dirty Chinese. That was the sort of fake thing. It was their weapons of mass destruction. So that gets released, and this causes the anti-war movement. Like, once the Pentagon Papers come out, you know, 1969, you may have heard of that year. It was kind of an important year.
It was a big year.
Yeah, that's when the anti-war movement hits its, like, ultimate stride, and people are pissed off because of the Pentagon Papers. And Nixon is starting to get, like, very, very paranoid. Nixon is like, I don't like this. I can't do a Nixon, sorry. Nixon is... I am not.
Well, I don't even know what that was.
I don't know. It was terrible. I'm going to edit that out. Except now I won't, because it was funny. So Nixon has the idea to make a special unit to fix leaks, or in other words, spy on people. Now, are you starting to see where this might be going?
Kind of.
Richard Nixon spying on people?
Is that Watergate?
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yeah. Now, when this started, and little G. Gordon Liddy was eating rats and electrocuting himself and talking about Nazi shit, did you expect that he would be in Watergate?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. That's where this is going.
Fine.
Yeah. So, shockingly, Nixon appoints G. Gordon Liddy to this plumber's unit that he had to fix leaks. That's what it said on the door.
Oh, that's what they actually called it.
The plumber's unit.
Oh.
Because they were trying to stop the leaks.
Stop the leaks.
Because the Pentagon Papers were a big fucking deal and really hurt Nixon.
Mm.
So, not shockingly, Gordon wants to model this unit after the SS.
Really?
Yeah. He called this unit Odessa, which was the name of an operation that helped bring Nazi criminals from Germany to Latin America.
Wow.
So Germany did this operation Odessa, and that's how you may be familiar with the fact that a lot of ex-Nazis escaped to Latin America.
Yeah.
That was an operation that was called Operation Odessa. So that's where he decides to get the name from.
Wow.
So he's now modeling this leak-fixing unit after...
Well, then he was probably in hog heaven.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's the perfect job for him. I mean, if you think about all the things we know about Gordon so far, him being in charge of this, like, secretive organization inside of the White House is probably... He was loving it.
Oh, it fits.
Yeah. I mean, if there was anyone who should be doing it, I guess it should be him.
Yeah.
So the other leader of this organization, Odessa, was a guy named Howard Hunt. He was an ex-CIA guy. Hunt writes spy novels, and Liddy loves reading them. So these two guys get to play spy for real.
Oh, no.
They do things like break into therapist's office to steal files on alleged leakers. Liddy describes all of the spy tools and cameras and special weapons that he gets in great detail. And in fact, they even took photographs. And there are photographs of them during their spy operations with Gordon wearing a shitty wig and, like, taking pictures in this spy place, and then he sent them to the CIA to get developed. It is the craziest thing ever. You're doing illegal spying for the White House, and you take pictures of yourself
in your Party City wig,
and you send them to the CIA to get developed.
And you're like, look, guys, look what we did.
And so I'm going to show you that picture real quick, and I want you to tell the audience
yes.
what this picture looks like, okay?
Okay. First of all, he looks like he's about to be in Soul Train.
Yeah, he does. He's wearing like a blue, like, fucking leisure suit.
Leisure suit, long hair.
Yeah, but it's a wig.
A wig.
It's clearly a wig.
Bell bottoms.
And he has a mustache and glasses.
But he does. He looks like he should be hosting or something.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's just funny that he would, like, take pictures
up
of
next,
himself.
Jackson 5.
While he's spying, but that's how stoked he is about being a spy.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just one of those funny things that he does. There's a lot of those. So basically, Hunt and Liddy are mostly after this guy named Daniel Ellsberg, who was the Pentagon paper leak. They think he was, and he was. Oh. And that's the guy they were after. They were on to him, but they had to come up with plans to try to catch him. And they come up with some crazy-ass plans. Gordon goes over some of the plans he has. One of them is to drug him and set fires to, like, cover them safe cracking in his house. Like, they're going to drug him, set a fire, and use the... When the firefighters come in, they're going to be plants. And they're going to clear the area, and this is going to allow him to crack the safe, and then they're going to put him back in his house and have him wake up from being drugged and not know that anything happened.
Oh.
Yeah, it's crazy. He comes up with some weird plans.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, all of them are stupid, and they don't go through with them because Nixon is like, I'm not doing that.
This is like some Wile E. Coyote shit.
Yeah, Nixon is like, no. So what he does do, though, is Liddy is like really excited about... You remember I told you about a little movie called Triumph of the Will?
Yes.
That was like a really big Nazi movie? Well, he thought that all the people in the White House were too big of pussies and that they needed to watch this. So he set up a special screening of Triumph of the Will for the staff of the White House.
Oh, of course. Bring some snacks.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is where we get into the beginning of Watergate, and it's going to be Watergate for a little while. So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop it here this week before we get into the nitty gritty of Watergate.
Okay.
But suffice it to say, that's where we're going. And he's now kind of going to be
Watergate
involved in all that.
Watergate or bust.
Yeah. So this weirdo Nazi freak that was killing chickens and obsessed with murdering people.
Shocking himself in mm-hmm. his bedroom as a kid.
Yeah, Nixon thinks he's a real good dude and should lead his spying campaign. And that's kind of where we're at for this week. So if you enjoyed it, there will be another episode next week continuing on the G. Gordon Liddy saga. A spoiler, he lives for a really long time, so there's a lot to talk about with this guy. But I think we made a pretty good progress.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a good idea of who this dude is?
Well, no. I mean, we're still learning.
Yeah.
He's a nut.
Yeah, he's a nut. I think we should describe what he looks like so people could understand. He's got a shaved, bald head.
He, to me, looks like a mixture of Fidel Castro mm-hmm. and Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, kind of.
I think it's the mustache and the olive skin.
Yeah, he's got olive skin, a shaved bald head, like it's all the way bald, like Mr. Clean bald, or like Stone Cold bald, and he's got a big mustache.
Yeah.
And that's kind of his like signature
and
look.
Suits, and he wears lots of suits.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, there's just something about him that gives off...
It's funny because his name...
Dictator.
Yeah, yeah, dictator vibes. He has fashy vibes,
he
big
does.
Time. That's because he's a fascist. That's a thing. But I think it's funny that his name is G. Gordon Liddy, and he really was a Fed. Like, he was a G-man. Mm. Like, for real, he was a G-man. So, I don't know. I find that interesting. And if you out there found it interesting and you want to tell us how interesting it was, you can find our email at carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. We also have a website. That's carolinasnowflakes.com. And, yeah, just let us know how you're enjoying the story, what you think of old G. Gordon Liddy. And if you were surprised that he was going to be involved in Watergate, I'd love to know someone who didn't know that's where it was going and having and finding that out, what did that make you feel?
How did that make you feel?
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for listening. Visit our website.
Bye.